Hello, everybody, and thanks for tuning in to kpcradio.com. Today is October 5th. I'm your host, Skylar Lester, and you're listening to Exposure, where we shine light on notable figures in the world of photography. Today's guest is Adjunct Assistant Professor of Photography, Sean McDonald, who has been teaching photography at Pierce College in Woodland Hills, California, for 16 years. As a camera buff with more than 30 years of experience in the field, Sean is the go-to gear guy at Pierce College. Hey, Sean, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, it's a pleasure. So to start us off, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background in photography?
Sure. It's kind of, it's long drawn out. In a quick nutshell, when I was a kid, we had a family friend who was a photography teacher in who taught in the high schools up in Central California. And I used to watch him like develop a roll of film, and that was like really fascinating. And he used to tell like interesting stories about teaching photography, and he knew Ansel Adams because he had done a workshop with him and stuff like that. And so that was kind of fascinating. And then my second year here at Pierce College as a student, I decided I wanted to take a photo class, and I had heard that they were hard to get into, but I actually managed to get into one, and that kind of bit the bug. I mean, it was just one of those things. I just got really into it, and then after taking every class I could possibly take here, including every directed study they used to offer and stuff like that, I ended up deciding to go to Cal State Long Beach and get my degree in photojournalism. I had a lot of friends who were either going to Art Center or were going for photojournalism, so I went that route because at the time I kind of liked the idea of, you know, having people give me stories to go shoot and that whole type of thing. That kind of changed while we were in school. A lot of the newspapers started shrinking and merging and stuff like that, so there weren't a lot of jobs when I was done. So when I got out of school, I was working at a camera store, and I just happened to mention to a friend of mine, one of the faculty members who used to be here who passed away, the great Joe Sicoccio, I mentioned to him that I was thinking of getting into teaching. I decided that maybe I should do something like that because I'm working at the lab. I kind of enjoyed helping people. They would come in, they would say, you know, why are my photos green? And I'd have to explain to them it was because of the white balance of the light and that type of thing. So I really kind of had fun with that because I'd worked at a lab in addition to working at a camera store. So between the two of those and helping people, I kind of like, I like this idea. And I didn't know what I was going to teach. And so he, in the background, started pushing some things around, and he told me to go take a test down at the district here. And that's how I ended up eventually becoming the instructional assistant photography and basically the guy who ran the lab here at campus. I originally started part-time, and then I took over full-time in 2000. And I started teaching down at Santa Monica College as an adjunct probably, I think it was fall of 99. And very quickly there, they were able to give me two classes, and I ended up teaching both traditional film, slide film for beginning class, and then the traditional darkroom. And that eventually led to me teaching other classes down there. Here at Pierce, I started teaching in 2001 and slowly but surely was able to teach almost every class we've ever offered here except for the photojournalism classes, ironically. I do have a degree in that, but the professor who teaches it here has a master's in it, so she trumps me. She's also the full-timer in the department chair, but that's not why. But she's actually really good at it, too. So I've always been fascinated with photography. Throughout all the years at school, I did a lot of assisting. I worked with photographers who ranged from shooting magazine work where they were just doing one-off articles on featuring people and portraits and things like that, doing some catalog work, shooting for a hospital. We did all the PR photos one time, to shooting car photography. I worked on a couple of different car shoots over the years in studio and on location. And so I've just always been fascinated by that, but I actually have more fun talking about it and telling people about it than actually, you know, doing a lot of it. I just have always been one of those people who just feels kind of strange having to try to live on that like freelancer type of lifestyle. It's just like, wait, where's the paycheck? Where's the money? I can't, you know, it's too stressful. So I ended up, you know, deciding to go down the teaching path. And so that's where I am.
Yeah. And, what is the most rewarding thing about teaching?
Seeing the moment when the photography students get it, when they're like looking at the camera and they finally just ding, you know, and it shows in their work. Like they'll turn in a bunch of assignments and you see a lot of mistakes, and then all of a sudden, click, everything's there. And that's kind of funny because it's the sound of a shutter. but it's actually, they seem to get it and they just seem to start growing. And I always love seeing students who actually really progress.
So as I mentioned earlier, you are definitely the go-to person on campus when it comes to questions about photography equipment. So I figured we should center this episode around photo gear FAQs. So let's start with the burning question here. Nikon or Canon?
That's a very good question. For me, when I first started, I actually was using Minolta. It was a film camera system. The idea was that I would buy the same camera my parents had. Maybe they would lend me their lenses, which did not come to fruition. They just said no. After like leading me on thinking I could. And then when I started going through school for journalism at the time, Nikon was still the dominant the dominant force in photojournalism. Canon had a bunch of systems that were more aligned for consumers. They definitely had tapped the consumer market pretty heavily, and they actually really dominated that sales market. But after a failure with autofocus systems, they suddenly leaped ahead of everybody by a light year almost with their whole EOS system. When they came out with that, it was like nobody could touch their autofocus. So I had already invested in a bunch of Nikon gear, and when the big change started happening at the newspapers, right around the time that I'd already thrown a lot of money into Nikon, I was like, well, I'm going to stay with Nikon. And I was still manually focusing at the time. My eyesight was still okay, and I wasn't worried about how fast it autofocused, because most of us didn't trust it for sports photography and stuff like that. But Canon then just went off, and they were the perfect place because then all the newspapers, after buying all their cameras in the 1980s, were all ready to start buying their next generation ones in the 1990s. So they took off. And when we got to the digital era, Canon and Nikon were both doing this partnership thing with Kodak for a long time, and then it eventually rolled to this moment where Canon decided to break away from that partnership and went with their own system, and they were the first ones to jump out there with a full frame camera, having the sensor being the same size as 35 millimeter film, as opposed to a crop sensor, which is what every digital camera was till that point. And plus, Canon seemed to jump out there with a consumer camera much earlier. Nikon kind of like, well, we think film's going to last a little longer, and they were definitely wrong. If you were going to go out and buy a camera now, I think the question is just which camera feels better in your hand. They both have incredible optics. You can have camera people can sit around and argue about Nikon and Canon optic quality back and forth endlessly. And you know, as you've heard me joke in classes, that, oh, Nikon's much better. But at the same time, it's just what's going to work for you. For, the hipster photographer who likes to have the old school equipment, if you have an old school Nikon film system, you can use every lens that Nikon's ever used on a current Nikon camera, which is a plus. With Canon, you can only go back to about 1988 when they started EOS. So you could still go back and still be cool and hip, but at the same time, Nikon's got cameras going back to 1959, and so there's a lot more there. But the other thing is it just goes down to, like I said, the interface, how the controls work, and what's got the best price point. I mean, if I was looking for a camera that was going to give me like the one camera I was going to use and I wasn't going to be professional and I didn't have to worry about like going to locations and renting lenses and having the same systems, the Pentax K50 series. I mean, it's a camera that's almost a semi-professional camera at a price point that's actually a little bit less than what the entry-level Rebel or Nikon 3000 camera goes for.
Well, that actually leads me to another question I was going to ask you. What is your opinion about these kind of less popular but still very present brands like Sony, Pentax?
Well, it's interesting. The Sony got into a really interesting place when they bought the remnants of the Minolta system. They bought the old, whatever Minolta was calling their digital system. They bought it really right about a year after Minolta introduced it. And that gave Sony the capability of being ready to jump into that market. And Sony has always been one of those companies that has always made amazing products for what they do. And their sensors, they were already selling sensors to a lot of different people. That's actually one of their bigger businesses, is actually their sensor business, not the actual products. So they started making DSLRs, and then they decided to go down this path of the idea, because a couple other companies had been experimenting with them, this idea of this mirrorless camera. Take out the mirror, have the sensor on the back showing everything that's going on there, put all the effort and the capabilities of the camera into the sensor and into the screen on the back that you're looking at. And so the idea was to try to take you away. But also Sony was looking at it as a crossover because of the 5D Mark II, which was the first DSLR to have video capability, and then the Nikon N90S right after that. That's the film camera, D90, thank you. With that whole changeover, they were in this place to really try to get that kind of crossover between still shooting and video. And I find that most people who have the Sony system tend to be people who do shoot a lot of stills, but they also do a lot of video. So it seems to be like this great capability of that. Personally, I own one of the Fuji little cameras, and the Fuji's got a whole line of like rangefinders, which are basically mirrorless cameras. And I like that because it's small and compact and it can fit my bag, but it's an additional camera that I use in addition to my Nikon. I have the D750 and all that stuff, and a couple other older cameras. But the mirrorless, I think it's a great thing for that market. I did get in a big argument with a former student about the size of them, but it's interesting. There's a really interesting size comparison online. I think it's on Petapixel, where they show the top of a Canon, Nikon, and Sony, that if you're using just the small little short lenses, obviously the Sony is really small and compact, and that's great. And if you're doing video, a lot of the times you're not worried about having a zoom lens. You're actually using fixed focal length, and you're zooming with your feet. You're moving closer back and forth. But once you put on like an equivalent 70 to 200, it's actually almost the same size, because the small, flat, compact body still has to have that extra space to compensate, so the lens length is actually correct, especially with the full frame Sony camera. So it comes down to what's going to work for you. The other personal thing I have, the other issue I have, is I want to look through the actual lens. I want to actually see what it is that I'm looking at when I'm shooting. And I don't know how cinematographers feel about this, but I know back in the old days with the old motion picture cameras, when they used to shoot 35mm and 70mm film, when they looked into that viewfinder, they were looking through the shooting lens. Now with this whole digital stuff, it's like you're still relying on looking at a digital screen. So I'm just not a big fan of that. And it's one of those things where we might eventually, that's where it's going to all go. It's hard to say.
Yeah. And I mean, you did touch on the mirrorless cameras. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit more about the different types of cameras that are available out there?
Oh, in terms of digital?
Or analog, too.
Oh, okay.
Just what the options are.
I mean, currently in analog, you have mostly used cameras. Nikon still makes I think it's called the F6, and that was their last more recent film camera. They actually introduced that in the middle of the digital era. They introduced that. Canon, I don't believe, makes any film cameras at all anymore. You can still find Leicas, which is a rangefinder style system, if you want to spend a lot of money for a film camera, $6,000 for a camera body and $2,500 for a lens, and then you can walk around on Broadway or McGrand down there and look real cool down there in downtown Los Angeles. But so for film cameras, it's just really finding something that you like and that you want to work with and you can maybe use in conjunction with your existing system, but you do run into some issues with that. Lens compatibility and whatnot. With digital, I don't know if you can really buy. I mean, a few companies still make point and shoot cameras. I know Fuji and Olympus and a couple of the companies still make small little form factor point and shoot digital cameras. I think the Nikon One, I don't even know if that's still current anymore. That was a real trendy one there for a while. And they even had Ashton Kutcher doing the commercials for them.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of, I think, has faded away. But you still have the next level up, which is the rangefinder, which uses what they call the four-thirds sensor. And you've got Fuji, who makes their whole X series of cameras. which have interchangeable lenses, and they look a lot like rangefinders, although a couple of the newer ones look a little bit like a DSLR, where they actually have an eyepiece viewfinder, but inside it's actually a little digital screen, in addition to having the live view capability like a mirrorless. Obviously, Sony, with their line, which uses inherently their own lenses too, and is also considered, on their small sensor, I believe it's actually a 2x3 sensor, which is what you would call a APS format, or the crop sensor DSLR format. They also make a full frame, which means it matches 35 millimeters size, which is 24x36 millimeters. And then you have the 4/3 cameras made by Panasonic and by Olympus. Olympus makes a whole series called Pen cameras. The Pen cameras are more of like the rangefinder to compete with the Sony's, or not the Sony's, I'm sorry, with the Fuji's. But the Pentax camera, not the Pentax, I'm sorry, the Panasonic cameras are actually very popular right now because their video capability, their sensors are amazing. Panasonic is the behind Sony, or maybe even ahead of Sony, is the, one of the largest chip manufacturers making the chips for the digital sensors. And so they have their own line of cameras that a lot of people use specifically for video. They buy these 4/3 cameras because they do 4K video, and they're amazing, and they're small and compact, and they're just like the thing that people are doing. Some of their lenses, and I think their sensors, might even be sold to DJI, or DJI, the people who make the drones. You know, everybody's buying those drones out there. And so those drones, some of those actually have 4/3 sensors and lenses on them, which is kind of interesting. Then when you move out of mirrorless, then you move into DSLR. And for the audience, the single lens reflex, or SLR, is where you actually are looking through a prism that in turn swaps the image horizontally, and then you're looking at a mirror that turns the image from upside down to right side up, and then you're looking actually through the actual lens when you're shooting. So that's what a single lens reflex means. With all the rest of the cameras, if you go to live view or look through the rangefinder, you're usually looking at a digital representation of what you're looking at in the scene, which means sometimes it actually may look more enhanced than it actually is. So then you have the whole SLR range, where you start with the consumer cameras like the Rebels and the 3000 and 5000 series Nikons. Then you move into the semi-professional. With Nikon, they've got like the 7000, and then you jump into the D500s, their latest one. Canon, their numbers are all over the place, but they have their, after the Rebels, you move into their D series, and you have the... I'm sorry, not D series. You have the number, then the series. So you have the 80D, which actually sounds like ADD. but the 70D was kind of funny, too, because they used to have a 7D, and they have a 7D Mark II still, and it gets really confusing. But a lot of those cameras are what you call the semi-professional. They have the crop sensor, but they have very good video capability, and they're good for a lot of really good shooting. A lot of students end up getting those. Full frame, they've got the 6D, and I think there's a new one coming out next year, which I wouldn't be surprised. It's probably coming out around February, because it's been on the market for a while. So you have an affordable full frame camera at the 6D, because I think the price with a lens is under $2,000. Nikon's D750 is right around that same price point, and I believe they still make the 610, the D610. And then you move into the better series of the full frame sensors, where you have like the Nikon just came out, the new D850 just came out, and everybody's running around trying to get their hands on those because supposedly it's now like the new hot thing. And it's starting to get some converts because Canon's been a little, they haven't come out with anything that's really wowed people in a while. The 5D Mark IV was not that much of an impressive camera. I mean, all the features were pretty much the same. It was just the sensor was a lot better. So for some people, it's like, well, it doesn't have a new bell and whistle. It doesn't make my coffee or turn on my car or anything. You know, it's like it seems like something else people kind of want with these cameras. And then you move into the real high-end the high-end models, where you have like the 1DS Mark VI or V or something like that. And then you have like the... when you get into Nikon, it's now the D5, and the D5 has like an ISO that can, which means a sensitivity that can go up to like 3 million. So we could turn off the lights in this room, and the glow of our personalities could light the photograph. You know, it's just,
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's definitely come a long way.
It definitely has. It's out there.
And when it comes to buying, where do you recommend that photographers order their equipment online?
Online. I've bought stuff for the school through B&H and KEH. Well, no, I'm sorry. We haven't bought for KEH. No, I'm sorry. KEH is actually a used camera store, so let's back that one off there. And they're good. I'm not, yeah. But we've also bought from Adorama. And then if you're going down the line of like trying to find video capable accessories and video type stuff, I know you can buy cameras. We've never bought from them, but we've bought a lot of accessories from them. You have like Pro Tools. No, sorry, not Pro Tools. That's a program. We have Film Tools and EVS out there in Burbank. They're two places that specialize in motion picture type stuff, and a lot of it's all gone digital video. So they have a lot of accessories if you're going down that path with your cameras. Locally, we've purchased from Sammy's Camera over the years. We've also purchased from Woodland Hills Photo right here in Woodland Hills. A lot of the places we used to buy from a place called Canoga Cameras over here in Canoga Park, but they went out of business. And so we've seen a lot of change, but a lot of the times we just have to, you know, buy. Personally, I've bought from almost everybody. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times it comes down to sometimes it's like loyalty to a salesperson. Like I'll find a salesperson I can deal with who can really help me out. And yes, I might be paying like the given rate and I may not be getting an extra deal or saving on tax because I'm going online, but I know I'm supporting a local person. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I want to buy something and he just can't match that price. He's off by 100, 200 bucks or something like that. So then I'll end up, pardon me, buying from online. Mm-hmm. So I've bought both directions on those. So.
And you mentioned KEH, so what are your feelings about buying used equipment?
One of the reasons I'm impressed with KEH, and I actually have not purchased from them anything other than a couple of accessory parts, I'm impressed the fact that they tend to have a warranty. One of the biggest problems you run into with buying used gear is how do you get it fixed? It's like buying a used car, you just know you're going to inherit some problems, and down the road you're going to have some issues, so... When you buy a used car from, you know, some guy down the street or somebody off of Craigslist, you don't know what you're going to get. But if you buy a used car from a dealer, then sometimes you get a warranty. So used cameras are kind of the same way. You want to see if you're buying a camera where you can get some sort of a warranty on that. I know that a lot of times they'll give you 30, 60, 90 days or a year, something like that. So it just comes along the lines of that. So, and all of them sell used. Adorama, B&H, KEH is a specialty used place. That seems to be their only business, mm-hmm. which means it looks like they're paying a little bit more attention to what it is that they're bringing in. I even was on there the other day and they were selling stuff and just said, as is parts. And I was like, oh, okay. So if you actually just needed to buy something to strip parts off of to fix something else, they have that too. Hmm. So that's kind of an interesting avenue.
Yeah.
You also have eBay, which sometimes you can buy warranties through what you're buying on eBay. You know, you still have some issues with eBay when you're buying used because you just don't know how that person treated it. But sometimes the person selling it doesn't even know what they have. I have a former student who just bought a really nice medium format camera like the photographer Richard Avedon used. He bought a Rolly, and he got this Rolly, Rolleiflex. He got it for like 60 bucks. He
wow.
found it on eBay, and the person, it was one of those things where he got a really good deal on the camera, and the person didn't know what they actually had.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes those deals are still out there.
Yeah, so you can definitely get a good deal sometimes. And many photographers know that quality glass can make all the difference. So I want to talk a little bit about lenses.
Okay.
What do you think are the best focal lengths for photographers to invest in?
That's a really open-ended question.
Maybe three, top three.
You know, it's one of those things. What you really want to look at is what kind of photography you want to do. Mm-hmm. If you're doing a wide variety of stuff, then the three lenses I would consider having in a kit would be something that goes from wide angle to short telephoto, and then something that goes from like short telephoto to medium telephoto, something in those lines. So if I was shooting crop sensor, you know, the kit lens is not bad, but I would find the next level up of the kit lens instead of the 18 to 55, maybe the 18-70 that has the faster aperture, which means it's a more of a quality lens that fits into what we would describe as a prime lens. Mm-hmm. And the aperture is probably wide open, which means it lets more light in, and it stays at a fixed focal length. It stays at a fixed f-stop instead of shifting as it zooms. So like the 18-70, 2.8 or something along those lines. I know that both Canon and Nikon and even Sony make lenses like that. Then the next lens up, since you're already getting to 70, would be the 70-200. If you're doing prop sensor, it's a great lens because at the 200, if you multiply that by 1.5, you're ending up with a lens that's actually almost a 300 millimeter. So you're getting a lot of telephoto out of that. Mm-hmm. And if you're shooting full frame, it's, you know, having a 24-70 or 24-85, something along those lines, with it fixed 2.8, and then having the 70-200 is a nice complement. It's like almost the perfect camera back. Mm-hmm. If you're more finite in terms of what you want to do in photography, if you're specifically wanting to do like street or landscape, industrial landscape, those types of things, architecture, then you're going to be staying in a lot of shorter lens lengths and probably going for fixed lens lengths depending on what you're trying to do. So sometimes we'll go into like a, for example, you might want to consider getting like a 24 or a 20 or even a 17-35 or something like that, or like a really extreme wide angle on a zoom, and then maybe a couple of fixed lengths like a 35 or a 50. And then the 70-200 still becomes a nice lens to have as a backup for that type of thing. If you're doing specifically portraits, then a fixed focal length portrait lens, you know, getting an 85 or a 135, mm-hmm. staying on like that, and just realize that that's like the perfect lens for shooting that stuff.
And what item besides your camera body and lenses do you always have with you on a shoot?
Obviously, extra cards. I always try to make sure I have clean, empty cards. After I shoot, I try to download all the images and then reformat them in the camera before I shoot. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if it's an important job, I'll actually build that into my billing price, so I'll actually buy a new card, mm-hmm. That type of thing. Lens cleaning kit and extra batteries, mm-hmm. you know, for the flash or even for the camera itself, the charger. But sometimes that gets a little heavy. Depends on how much, you know, what shooting you're doing and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the SD cards or memory cards, is there a certain brand that you trust?
I tend to like the Lexar and the SanDisk. I've had pretty good luck with them. Mm-hmm. I've also, over the years, have used the ones made by Delkin. I've had some good luck with them. But if you haven't heard of the name brand, that would be make me question it.
It's a good indicator.
Type of thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like, exactly.
Yeah, a crashed card could be a photographer's worst nightmare.
So exactly.
How often do you recommend you replace SD cards?
I would figure if you fill the things up about 10 times, you would probably start using that as a backup or something, or not use it at all, you know, maybe that type of thing. I find that at a certain point, the older cards I have, I get a newer camera and all of a sudden they're too slow. Mm-hmm. So I have to buy a card that actually has a faster capability. So that's when I phase them out.
Okay. And we are short on time, but I do have one final question for you. Since we've covered so much about photo equipment, in your opinion, is it the artist, the tools, or a little bit of both?
It's the artist and how they use the tools. So, yes, it is the tools, but it definitely is the artist. I mean, I've seen people pull out the most amazing images, and I'm like, what do you shoot that with? And you're like, what? You know?
Mm-hmm.
I once heard a story of a guy who showed up at this lecture series, showed this amazing landscape photograph. Everybody was like, wow about it. And they're like, you know, what did you shoot that with? And throwing out all these cameras and names and stuff like that. It was during the film era. And he pulls out a Mickey Mouse 126 camera. It was an Instamatic 126 Mickey Mouse camera. And he shot this photograph that like rivaled an Ansel Adams 8x10 image.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a lot of it has to do with
exactly.
your eye.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the eyes and the skills. And I think any photographer can pick up any equipment and do something with it.
All right. Well, I definitely want to close the show by sharing any links you might have with our listeners. Is there anywhere people could see your work?
Well, my website's currently down. I do have an Instagram site, so if you look for Sean McDonald, you should be able to find it, and that's the proper Irish S-E-A-N and then McDonald, M-C-D-O-N-A-L-D. You should be able to find me. SeanMcDonaldPhotography.com is, like I said, currently down, but if it pops back up and you Google it, you should be able to find me. But there's also a guy in Australia with the same name, so if you find a bunch of photographs down in Australia, it's not me.
Good to know. All right, well, That's about all the time we have for today. But I want to thank you so much, Sean, for joining us here on Exposure.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It was a pleasure. And thank you so much to our listeners for tuning in. For KPCRadio.com, I'm your host, Skylar Lester. Have a terrific Thursday.